Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
In reason and in science, we trust.
After a legal update, we'll hear from cognitive psychologist and popular science author Steven Pinker
about his book Enlightenment Now, The Case for Reason, Science, Humanism, and Progress.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Nearly 7 in 10 African countries are not on course to reach the 10% COVID-19 vaccination target by the end of September, a senior official from the World Health Organization, WHO, said on Thursday. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, also warned that Africa's third wave of surging coronavirus infections was absolutely not over. Many countries were still at peak risk, Dr. Moeti said, adding that this week's Eid celebrations may result in a rise in cases. Latest data from the UN Health Agency indicates a small drop in infections in Africa after an eight-week surge, but this is only because of a sharp decrease in South Africa, which accounts for the bulk of the continent's reported cases. More than 20 African countries have seen cases rise by more than 20% for at least 2 weeks in a row, and the Delta variant has been found in 26 nations on the continent. Around 3.5 to 4 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine are administered weekly in Africa, but to meet the September target of protecting 10% of the population, this needs to rise to 21 million doses each week at the very least, WHO said. A call to the world's richest nations now to invest more in sustainable living to feed the world's growing population from the head of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO. In his appeal on Thursday to G20 environment ministers, Qu Dongyu highlighted the challenge of having to produce more food while reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The FAO chief backed better water management measures to address water scarcity, which affects more than a billion people. Almost 1 billion hectares of rain-fed cropland and pastureland are also severely affected by recurring drought, said Mr. Qu, who insisted that these water-related challenges could be addressed with digital innovation, better oversight and investment. The FAO Director General also called for greater efforts to slow biodiversity loss. Reversing deforestation will help mitigate against climate change and reduce the risk of future disease outbreaks passing from animals to humans, said Mr. Qu, adding that the economic benefits of halting biodiversity loss and land degradation could amount to $1.4 trillion per year. It's been 60 years since the 1961 Convention to Reduce Statelessness, and on Thursday, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, welcomed Togo's decision to join international efforts to tackle the causes of the problem. Head of UNHCR, Philippe Grandi, hailed the move, noting that it built on the great momentum in West Africa's fight against statelessness. In Togo, the development is in line with ongoing reforms to the country's nationality code to give equal rights to women. Statelessness describes people who are not recognized as citizens by any country. It is a global phenomenon that affects millions of people, leaving them marginalized and highly vulnerable. There are at least 1.6 million stateless people across West Africa, UNHCR said, adding that worldwide an estimated 4.2 million live in more than 90 countries. Given that most countries do not collect any data on statelessness, the actual figure is believed to be substantially higher. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio. And at Free Thought Radio, our motto is not "In God We Trust," but "In Reason and in Science We Trust," especially as the COVID-19 pandemic goes on and on. sleeves up, folks. Do your patriotic part to end the pandemic.
And I'm Dan Barker, and if you trust in God instead of trusting Fauci, you may suffer more than an ouchie.
Is that original?
That's my original, my great original song lyrics. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves and co-host with Annie Laurie of this show, which is the July 22nd, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka of Audio for the Arts is our engineer. He's producing the show in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall. Free Thought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We are a membership organization of like-minded individuals, freethinkers, humanists, skeptics, atheists, agnostics, who also believe fervently in the First Amendment's Establishment Clause separating religion from government. And we also believe religion from social policy. We are over 35,000 members. If you are one, thank you. If not, we would love to have you join us at FFRF.org, or we would be glad to send you an introductory packet, including our newspaper, Free Thought Today, so you can get better acquainted.
There are a lot of free thinkers in the country, atheists, agnostics, secular humanists. And here in Madison, there's a lot. I keep bumping into them. A couple of days ago, I went outside in the morning to get the morning newspaper, and a man was walking his dog right down the sidewalk there, passing by the beautiful garden that you make every year, Annie Laurie, with just a blazing color of all these flowers. And he stopped, and I didn't know this guy, but he stopped and he said, "Wow, we really love your garden. My family and my kids, we walk by, and, you know, we are all committed atheists, but this garden almost makes us believe in God."
So, well, I hope that individual will become a member, and I hope he will overlook what I call my garden of Whedon.
So, we have a great show today. In the second half, we're going to hear my interview with the cognitive psychologist, linguist, and the popular science author, Steven Pinker. He wrote The Language Instinct, The Blank Slate, and the book Enlightenment Now.
And Steven Pinker will be speaking at our convention, our in-person convention in November in Boston, when he will tell us all about his newest book. It will be hot off the press next fall, called Rationality, What It Is, Why It Seems Scarce, and Why It Matters. And boy, does it matter. And speaking of the convention, we now have our registration form up on our website at FFRF.org. Look under the convention and events link and you'll find us.
And people are signing up already.
People are signing up right away. Someone found it even before we publicized it. And we have Margaret Atwood, Gloria Steinem, Anne Drianne, and her daughter Sasha Sagan. We have Sikivu Hutchinson from Black Skeptics of Los Angeles. We have David Tamayo, who founded Hispanic American Freethinkers. Catherine Stewart, the Power Worshippers. Our own Andrew Seidel will be giving a workshop on the Christian nationalism at the January 6th insurrection. Linda Greenhouse, who is one of the most revered observers of the Supreme Court, who covered it for more than 30 years for the New York Times, has a new great book out coming out about Amy Coney Barrett, the replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg by her. That's just going to be out in November. She'll be signing copies of books. Too many other great speakers to mention in full. So you'll want to be there. It's a two-day full convention on Friday, November 18th, and Saturday, November 19th. And you can sign up now. We don't want you to be disappointed. At FFRF.org, I think it says convention/2021 or convention-2021. You can find it at our link. And it also has the information about the hotel, and there's plenty to sightsee, and it's usually pretty mild in Boston. So we hope to have a fabulous, I can't call it post-pandemic convention, but at least mostly post-pandemic for us. You have to be fully vaccinated in order to register.
Last week, we told you briefly about a temporary setback in one of our lawsuits in Texas. We're suing a judge for having his courtroom sessions open with prayer.
And we didn't have time to explain that ruling, so we will, in a few minutes, hear FFRF attorney Sam Grover, who is spearheading this case, make sense of this decision by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. He'll give us the lowdown, and he'll join us in a minute as soon as we do our brief news roundup. And I do want to say that we are happy to announce that the Hyde Amendment is not part of the spending bill for Health and Human Services at the moment. That is a Catholic prohibition of funding for abortion care for low-income indigent women. And there's going to be a vote on it the week of Monday, August 26th. We're not sure what day. If you're listening to this radio show, check. And you can contact your representative. We will be sending out an action alert to our members to do so, asking them to support the spending bill without this prohibition of public funding for low-income women to receive legal abortion care and exercise their rights under Roe versus Wade.
Is this the first time in more than 40-some years?
It's the first time it hasn't been included in the spending bill, so yay, Biden. And we also, of course, as I pointed out in the opening, we are seeing that anti-vaccination crusaders are prolonging our pandemic plight. And among them are many members of Congress. And we want to just play a little bit of recent remarks by U.S. Representative Madison Cawthorn, who's a Republican out of North Carolina.
And now they're starting to talk about going door-to-door to be able to take vaccines to the people. Think about the mechanisms they would have to build to be able to actually execute that massive of a thing. And then think about what those mechanisms could be used for. They could then go door-to-door, take your guns. They again go door-to-door, take your Bible.
Yeah.
So this is in reaction to Biden's July 6th remarks to the nation about how they were going to continue going door-to-door. And this is volunteers, even clergy, medical people in the community, and they made anti-vaxxers made it sound like the federal agents were coming to your door and poking needles in your arm
and
against
away
your will and taking away
Bibles.
Your Bibles and your guns. And he was not the only member of Congress to be this irresponsible. There were a number of them, of course, Representative Lauren Boebert, however you say her name, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who compared outreach workers to medical brown shirts. And this is unacceptable. And we also have governors chiming in. And, of course, South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster announced they won't be going door-to-door in his state, even though we have a huge upsurge. Only about 43% of South Carolinians are vaccinated. We also have the Missouri Governor Mike Parson tweeting that they won't let federal agents go door-to-door. And he has an appalling pandemic record. He never issued masking requirements in Missouri. He signed a law placing limits on public health restrictions. Arizona's Attorney General kind of doing the same thing. Governor Ron DeSantis is actually selling anti-vaccine merchandise. He has a T-shirt he's selling reading, "Don't Fauci My Florida." Hmm. And Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz responded that Floridians are facing death by DeSantis. Most discouraging.
That's a good line. I used to preach that Christians cared about the sick, but apparently that's not true anymore, is it?
Well, at least not these Christian nationalists. And speaking of anti-science attacks, we do want to point out that last week, and I don't think we talked about it on the show last week, there was an appalling incident where Dr. Michelle Fiskus was fired by the state of Tennessee. She was the immunization program director because she was publicizing the right of teenagers to get vaccinated, in some cases without parental consent, although that wasn't the thrust of any of her publicity. And so they fired her. And she wrote a protest, and she said nearly 40% of immunization program directors have been fired or have been forced out of office or have retired because they can't stand the work. And she said they've been disparaged, demeaned, accused, vilified by a public who chooses not to believe in science, and elected and appointed officials who have put their own self-interest above the people they were chosen to represent and protect. It's something worth reading. And we would point out that this firing of her happened on the same week as the 96th anniversary of the Scopes trial in Dayton, Tennessee, one of those monumental landmark anti-science moments.
1925.
And also the fourth anniversary of FFRF placing that beautiful statue memorializing Clarence Darrow on the Ray County Courthouse, where they had put up one to lionize William Jennings Bryan, the creationist, and failed to have one to balance it, and that was sculpted by Zenos Roudakis. It's beautiful, so if you're in Dayton, Tennessee, it's worth the trip to see that. But we are really facing know-nothings right now.
Last week, we told you about a sheriff deputy in Georgia who was posting religious messages on the official sheriff's Facebook page. Our attorneys, who are always very busy complaining about violations of state church separation, wrote a letter. Well, we just got a notice that they're going to stop that. The employee said, "I was advised to inform you that all the Facebook posts will be removed. There won't be any future posts placed on the sheriff's official page." So that's a victory. And then up north of that in Georgia, a school district that had Bibles in their backpacks for children, they are stopping that. And another school in that same district was having religious devotional messages on the wall. They wrote to us to say, "We are removing and inspecting all bags to make sure that there is no religious messages being put." So thank you to the attorneys for their hard work. Now, to discuss what's happening with FFRF's lawsuit against a religious judge in Texas, this is a suit that's been going on for many years. We have on the phone today FFRF attorney Sam Grover, who's been spearheading that case. So thank you for joining us today, Sam.
Thanks for having me on, Dan. Any worry?
So a couple of weeks ago, there was a decision by an intermediary three-judge panel on the Fifth Circuit. Let's start with the case. What is this case about with Judge Mack?
Right. Basically, Judge Mack is a justice of the peace in Montgomery County, Texas, who opens all of his court sessions with clergy-led prayer. It's a pretty unique practice that is not replicated anywhere else in the country as far as we know. And after initially asking him to stop and then going to the Texas State Commission on Judicial Conduct to get them to stop him, finally we had to resort to a lawsuit. And so we represent an attorney who has appeared before Judge Mack several times and no longer practices in that court because he objects to the prayer practice.
And of course, then he would also know that he's endangering his client's welfare if he gets on the bad side of the judge, right?
Exactly. He's not there to make a political statement or a statement about his personal religious beliefs. He's there to represent a client, and the client just wants him to win the case. So he's not in a position to refuse to observe this prayer practice.
And they announce it correct, and then they supposedly give someone a chance to leave the room. And then don't they lock the doors during the prayer?
Yeah. So Judge Mack is in the room. He introduces the clergy member who's going to deliver the prayer. And then Judge Mack just stays in the room after that. So he can observe anyone who is trying to enter the courtroom after the prayer. There's just no good way to enter this small courtroom without drawing the attention of Judge Mack, who will put two and two together and know whether an attorney with repeat business before the court is dodging the prayer practice.
Well, that touches on
has a huge prejudicial impact.
That touches on standing, but I mean, it's just wrong for a judge to be praying in a courtroom. So
We should say first that this spring we won a wonderful decision at the U.S. federal court level, correct, in our favor.
Exactly. So the district court judge in our case challenging Judge Mack's practice gave us all the relief we asked for, which is just declaratory relief stating Judge Mack's prayer practice violates the Constitution. It violates the Establishment Clause, and that's that. So we got that decision, and as part of that decision, our district court judge had to recognize that this is not a historically supported practice in any way. Courtrooms have not been doing this practice throughout the country during any period in our nation's entire history. This is a true anomaly. So that decision came down. We were very happy with it. Judge Mack, of course, appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Texas. And recently, the Fifth Circuit issued a decision temporarily staying or putting on hold the district court's decision granting us relief.
So Sam, that means that the prayers can continue in the meantime, correct?
Yes. So Judge Mack is continuing to pray to this day in his courtroom and subjecting everyone, all the litigants who come before him, to those prayers.
He's free to exclude and offend anybody he wants in that courtroom, isn't he?
So can you tell us about Justice or Judge Oldham, who wrote that decision? Wasn't it rather shocking? And we only have about half a minute left.
Yeah. The short version is Judge Oldham used this stay order as an opportunity to sort of pontificate on his own personal take on some legal theories that are just patently incorrect, which is odd. But more to the point, he also took the opportunity to give this false historical account that basically the nation has always had judicial prayer, and he equated Judge Mack's practice to the Supreme Court practice of simply saying, you know, God save the United States Honorable Court, which is not a one-to-one comparison at all.
Sam, we're out of time. Sorry to interrupt you.
We're appealing on the merits, and the case does move forward.
Yes, thank you very much, Sam. And coming up, Dan?
Coming up, we're going to hear Shelley Siegel's Atheist album, and then we will hear Steven Pinker talk about Enlightenment Now. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It's been 10 years since Shelley Siegel's Atheist album came out. Shelley is the Australian-born singer-songwriter who now lives in California, whose Atheist album made quite a splash in 2011. Here is a song from that album called I Don't Believe in Fairies.
Thank you.
Shelley Siegel performing her song, I Don't Believe in Fairies, and that's available on Shelley Siegel's Atheist album. It's also available on FFRF's Adrift on the Star album at FFRF.org shop.
So we're going to take a break, but after the break, we're going to hear my interview with Steven Pinker. He's the cognitive psychologist, the linguist, the author. He's also FFRF's honorary president. He'll be speaking at our convention in November. He's written a number of books, including The Language Instinct and Enlightenment Now. And in November, we'll hear him talk about his new book, Rationality. So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And as we noted, we are going to be having our 44th Annual National Convention in person the weekend of Friday, November 18th and Saturday, November 19th in Boston, which is really the home territory of cognitive scientist, linguist, and author Steven Pinker. And he will be speaking along with Margaret Atwood, Gloria Steinem, and a cast of activists and authors you won't want to miss. And he's going to be talking about his new book, Rationality, What It Is, Why It Seems Scarce, Why It Matters, and boy, do we need that book. When Pinker spoke at our 2017 convention, he gave us his very first talk about what was then his new book, Enlightenment Now. And Dan, you had the pleasure of being able to sit down with Steve to do an interview with him. And I know, I think your first question was asking if he's optimistic about rationality making a difference in our world.
I think I've read almost everything you've ever written from way, way back. When was The Language Instinct? Back in
1994.
That was an amazing eye-opening book. And your whole career is focused pretty much on linguistics and the brain and language. And I'm still telling young parents, read this book. You're observing this almost a miracle happening when you're watching your kids learn language in that. But through your whole career of the blank slate and the Better Angels of Our Nature, I pick up like a theme of optimism. You tend to be a very positive, optimistic person in your writings. You tend to show things aren't as bad as we think they are. And you're writing another book. Is it going to continue that same kind of a theme?
It is, and it's somewhat of a paradox, given that I firmly believe that in human nature, that we have been saddled by evolution with a number of nasty traits like self-deception, like tribalism, like authoritarianism,
sexism, racism,
magical thinking. But on the other hand, we have also been endowed with some faculties that offer us a kind of hope for redemption. We have the faculty of reason.
You mean redemption in a natural sense.
In a natural sense, in the sense of we're not doomed to strife and poverty and disease and ignorance.
Yeah.
We have a modicum of reason. It doesn't work all that well by itself, but when it's embedded in institutions that enhance reason, such as freedom of speech, empirical testing, critical inquiry, it can enhance its own power. We have a modicum of sympathy, that is, we can feel each other's pain. By default, that tends to be applied only to members of our family and clan and tribe, but it can be expanded through the arts, through technologies of empathy, where we see the world through other people's eyes, through reason, when we're convinced that there can't be anything special about us just because we're us and other people are not. And so the circle of sympathy can expand. So my optimism doesn't come from any naive belief in the goodness of human nature. I certainly don't believe that. But with the right norms and institutions, we can magnify the powers of reason and sympathy that we were endowed with.
So you seem to say in your books that we do have these instincts for self-preservation, and of course, at least minimally for self-defense, you sometimes have to be violent, just because you want to protect your kids from predators or whatever. But we're social animals. Would you say altruism itself is instinctive, or is that something learned? Is that a cultural?
I think there is an instinct for altruism. I think we naturally apply it to our blood relatives because genes look out for copies of themselves in other bodies. I think we also have a capacity for fairness and exchange and reciprocity and trading favors. By themselves, that isn't enough for a large-scale society to be homogeneous. But it does give us the seeds that we can plant and that can grow. And through norms such as the rule of law, we can figure out ways to get along, even though left to our own devices, what nature gave us isn't enough.
Yeah. I think Jefferson said something about that. The morality has to be, he predated Darwin by a few decades. Morality must be something, he didn't use the word instinct, but something within us, because look at how normal it is. And you point out in your last book that we shouldn't rely on the headlines, because the headlines in the newspaper or on TV, you say, they don't really represent human nature. They represent the weird aberrations of human nature. How did you put it? You never see a reporter on a corner.
Here I am reporting from a school that has not been shot up,
yeah,
or a country that's not at war, or a city square that hasn't been the victim of a terrorist attack. Yeah, news is about stuff that happens. It's not about stuff that doesn't happen. Stuff that doesn't happen is what makes life worth living, the wars that don't happen, the crimes that aren't committed.
Yeah.
Also, the improvements in the human condition that we see are gradual. There's never a day in which, or very rarely a day in which, something magnificent happens. I mean, when smallpox was eradicated, that might be close. When the polio vaccine was proven to be safe and effective.
Did you take the little pills as a kid? I remember we had to take those polio pills.
I got shot up, but then other kids got the same.
We had to get in line in Driesville.
The pink syrup, yeah.
Well, and it worked, apparently.
And it worked, yeah. So polio is almost eradicated from the planet.
Huh.
But those are the exceptions. When something really good happens on Thursday, and so it can be a headline. More often, the declines in violent crime, the declines in death in warfare, the advance in human prosperity and longevity, they're gradual. There's never a day in which you see a sudden leap, but extended over time, plotting the numbers on a graph, you see that we're much, much better off than our ancestors, but the newspapers tend not to report it because it never happens in a flash.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't sell newspapers. It's not the kind of thing.
That is another aspect. Aside from the fact that good things tend to unfold gradually, we are, as a species, consumed with bad news. For our entertainment, we like to see violence in murder mysteries and in war films and Shakespearean tragedies. And a lot of psychological research shows that we're very vigilant to bad things that can happen. We're, in fact, much more upset about bad things than we are cheered by good things.
But doesn't that prove the point? When you see a headline, don't we naturally say, like some parent does some horrible thing to the kid. I mean, you say, oh, that's horrible. Don't we instinctively say, what an inhuman thing to do? Don't we assume that the human thing to do is not that, right? We have this, we have a bed of goodness and altruism that the normal human being, that's not going to sell headlines by saying, you know, mama hugs her kid today, right?
But, right. Yes, that's true. It's the discrete events with a lot of harm done very quickly that are almost the definition of news.
And you've been questioned about your book, Better Angels of Our Nature, about, well, if things are getting less violent, well, look at the news. Look at Syria right now. Look what's happening. Doesn't that blow your whole thesis out the window?
Yeah, that's why the only way you can appreciate the state of humanity is to look at data. You have to plot them on graphs, and you see that there are ups and downs, but the overall slope is downward. Even the horrific tragedy of Syria, plotted on a curve of war deaths since World War II, which of course was sky high, it's been a downward roller coaster. Syria is a is an uptick. Since decline, the worst years of the war are probably over. And they are horrific. It would be great if the number of wars were zero. It's not zero, but it's less than what it used to be. We forget about the horrific wars that took place in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s that had death tolls that were far higher than the Syrian civil war.
And in percentage terms, back in medieval times, it was even, as your book points out, very, very dangerous time to live.
There were some pretty horrific centuries before the modern era, the Mongol conquests, the fall of the Roman Empire, the fall of various Chinese dynasties could kill people by the tens of millions.
So how does religion play into this? Does religion help? Does going to church and praying to Jesus, you know, are religious people doing a better job of combating our natural violence, or is religion contributing to it?
Well, over the long sweep of history, religions certainly have contributed to bloodshed and mayhem. There were the Crusades, the European Wars of Religion, like the Thirty Years' War, the Inquisition. There were probably about a tenth of the people who've been killed in various atrocities over the course of history were victims of religious fanaticism. Now, you could say, okay, well, 90% weren't, but you'd kind of think that the number of people murdered for religion should be zero, but it's a lot. Now, this doesn't mean that all religious institutions contribute to violence. Many don't. But what we have to focus on is the institutions and not the supernatural beliefs. There are benefits to some religions, but that's because there are benefits to many institutions, to service organizations, to clubs, to international institutions. They don't need the supernatural beliefs, but when people work together for a goal that they can justify, then good things can happen. When people work together toward goals that come down from some supernatural deity, not so often.
Because a lot of religious people are doing good things, and their church is like the vehicle that they're happening to be using. But the principles there, the values, the human moral values are common to all of us, religious or not.
That's right. You know, I think many religions have become more liberal, more humanistic. They've downplayed their legacy of supernatural beliefs and dogma and authority in favor of universal values like life and health and education. Mm-hmm. And as such, they're kind of converging with non-religious service organizations like the Lions Club and the Shriners and Rotary, which are working to eliminate disease and increase education as well. And institutions that work to promote human flourishing are good things. You just don't need a belief in invisible entities to do it.
Well, I know in my town here in Madison, Wisconsin, there's a lot of non-believers in Madison, and we find ourselves marching in the same parades with our Christian and Jewish friends. I mean, it's the issues that matter. It's not the doctrine that matters. We're trying to solve real needs in the real world, and that's common to all humanity.
Absolutely, and that would be a benevolent direction that many religions have followed, and let's hope we'll continue to follow.
So after the break, we'll hear the rest of that conversation between my co-host, Dan Barker, who is co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and Steven Pinker, who is its honorary president. And as we go out, we're listening to Moth to the Flame by Mama Kay and the Love, and that is a group of freethinkers, some of them are atheists, a band in Tasmania. I wonder if they joke that they're Tasmanian devils.
The name is Mama Kay and the Big Love. That's funny. I suppose they would take that as a compliment. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I am Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're listening to a 2017 interview that my co-host Dan did with eminent cognitive scientist, linguist, author, atheist, Steven Pinker, who is honorary president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is an interview about what was then his new book in 2017, Enlightenment Now. He has another one coming out in the fall, Rationality, What It Is, Why It Seems Scarce, Why It Matters, and he'll be speaking at FFRF's 44th Annual Convention. And so let's listen to the rest of this interview.
You tend to be pretty optimistic, I think, and that makes reading your books really fun. I mean, it's like you can go to bed at night and say, okay, there's some hope. I think there's some hope from it. Do you think there is such a thing as an arrow of progress? You remember the French Condorcet, the French, he wrote that thing about he thinks there is this urge or arrow or something of human progress. And we're tending to see things like that as far as women's rights and acceptance of gay. We're seeing some progress with history. Is that an inevitable thing, or do we have to work at that? Is that a cultural thing we have to do?
I think we have to work at it. And Martin Luther King, of course, invoked the arc bending toward justice from Theodore Parker.
Yeah.
It sometimes almost looks like that, because when you plot measures of human well-being, prosperity, nutrition, and education, and freedom, they do tend to veer upward. But there's no law of nature that says that must happen. There are a number of laws of nature that are pushing against it, such as the law of entropy or second law of thermodynamics. There are more ways for things to go wrong than for things to go right. They're the darker sides of human nature. By no means is progress inevitable. Progress is really the result of problem solving, of recognizing that there are ways of improving our lot and working together to implement them.
And once we've tasted it, once women have the right to vote, you don't want to give that up. You progress, and that's something that society is embracing and say, we like this. Let's try to hold on to that.
Absolutely, and we can lose sight of that, again, if we concentrate too much on the news. Because even though over the last couple of years there have been more headlines about white supremacy, about hate crimes, outbursts of sexism, still the standard has risen so much so that not even, say, the Donald Trump, who by many eyes has contributed to that, he is not proposing bringing back racial segregation, taking away the right of gay people to be teachers, taking away the vote from women. Mm-hmm. These are just, by now, inconceivable.
Yeah, they're givens. Yeah.
They're just givens. And so we look at the little deviations from that rising tide as signs that things are getting worse, forgetting how high the tide has risen.
It's a bit like the stock market. You know, if you watch the stock market every day, you can be really depressed for a while because, oh, no, look at this. But if you do, like you said, if you do this, when you're in the middle of one of these downturns, you can still be optimistic because you know there's a general, whatever you call it, a tide or something that seems to be right.
That's right. There's a long-term increase, and there are short-term fluctuations that are superimposed on them. It doesn't mean that there can't also be disasters, you know, Black Thursdays and great recessions.
Or in Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. But even with these hurricanes, look at the outpouring of empathy and charity and human giving and working that happened. We did see some looting. We saw a little bit of that, which is kind of, what is that, embarrassing or something?
Yeah.
I mean, there's something in human nature that some people are going to go out and. But on balance, I think we saw a lot more stories of people reaching out and helping and giving money and trying to, you know, humans helping other humans.
There actually is a field called disaster sociology that looks to see what happens when people are confronted with a disaster. And it is generally true that when confronted with adversity, people do work together, they restore services, they tend not to panic. There sometimes is looting, but it's really more of an exception than the rule.
Well, teenage guys are something that are, you know...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Teenage guys whose frontal lobe isn't quite totally...
not wired up yet. Yeah.
So... The Better Angels of Our Nature, a wonderful book. I mean, rave reviews, probably just as strong as The Blank Slate, which The Blank Slate is in my top 10. And Better Angels, of course, is in that same league. Your next book about enlightenment, is that like a follow-up, or is that going to be like...
It is, yeah. It's called Enlightenment Now, and the subtitle is The Case for Reason, Science, Humanism, and Progress. And it, I got the idea to write it when after finishing The Better Angels of Our Nature, which had 100 graphs showing that violence is in long-term decline. And then I started noticing that there were other measures of human well-being that also show improvement. We're getting richer. We're living longer. We're getting better educated. We're getting more literate. We're getting happier. And by we, I don't mean rich people in the United States. I mean worldwide. We're getting safer. Fewer people get mowed down on the sidewalk by cars. Fewer people die in plane crashes. Fewer people get struck by lightning. Pretty much every measure of human safety, well-being, flourishing is on the rise. Now, that requires an explanation. It's a fact about the human condition that very few people realize. And I wrote Enlightenment Now when I realized that the decline of violence is actually an example of one example of many advancing fronts of human progress. If we continue to encourage ideals that made it possible, namely reason, science, and humanism. And by humanism, I mean the idea that morality consists in enhancing the well-being of men, women, and children, as opposed to, and other sentient animals, but as opposed to the glory of the tribe, the advancement of the faith, the well-being of the nation, or the expansion of the nation. As long as you focus on the happiness, health, and experience of men, women, and children, and apply knowledge to enhance them, success is possible.
So it's kind of like a species hygiene. We're taking care of us. I don't know if you're like me, but when I was a kid, we didn't wear seatbelts.
No, of course not.
We just drove all over the place. And now you would think that was totally reckless.
That would be like child abuse.
Yeah, and
you know, so... you sit on your daddy's lap and
I know, and sleeping in the back window. What if you hit, you know...
Oh, yeah, but making faces at the cars behind
but
you.
But look at how it's so automatic now that we just do that. Look at the social benefits of just something as simple as snapping a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Or other measures that we take for granted in life that...
Oh, absolutely. You know, fewer people get burned to death in fires. Fewer people drown. Fewer people fall to their deaths. It's really astonishing. So, and it's not... You can't point to one thing that led to these advances, which is why it kind of almost makes me believe in progress. Some of it is federal regulation. Those of us, those people who are constantly criticizing the nanny state and the overprotective federal regulations should keep in mind that we're 99% less likely to die in accidents than we used to be.
Wow.
Those regulations really save lives. But it's also technology. Often companies will make their products safer just because people don't want to be, mutilated or suffer amputations from their equipment.
Yeah.
Partly it's because of affluence. Once you are richer, you can afford safer products. Safety is something of a luxury. People would rather get from A to B in a car, and if they're richer still, they'll buy a car with airbags. So many things push in the same direction.
Well, we're out of time here. I think what I get from what you say and what you write is that without a God, without religion, we can still have hope in our life. We can still anticipate not an afterlife, but a better life, a better future. And
absolutely. The laws of the universe don't care about you, but other people care about you.
Huh.
And that's really our hope for progress.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It was really a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks so much, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
So that was Stephen Pinker, and he will be speaking at FFRS 44th Annual Convention in Boston the weekend of Friday, November 18th, and Saturday, November 19th. It's two full days, and he'll be speaking Friday morning. So sign up at FFRF.org. Look for the convention and events link.
And that's our show for today. We want to say greetings to listeners to WOOMLP in Philadelphia, heard also in New Jersey, to WIDE and WMUU in Madison, Wisconsin, to WADR Community Radio in Janesville, KEOS in College Station, Texas, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW 97.3 FM in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, WOOL Black Sheep Radio in Bellows Falls, Vermont, WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York, And if you're listening to us on the podcast, which plays after the show is aired, give us a thumbs up on your provider and tell your friends to visit our show at ffrf.org/radio.
And find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at our website, ffrf.org, and join us. We would love to be 50,000, 100,000 strong, and then we would really have a secular voice and be able to influence legislation. So go to ffrf.org and sign up or ask for a free sample of our newspaper, Free Thought, today. The August issue is now out. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday